RA-TV with Cam Edwards.
To keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Amen. Good Wednesday to you. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of Cam and Company right here on NRA-TV. You heard the end. Let's go ahead and give you the whole thing. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That was the scene in Abingdon, Virginia last night, Southwest Virginia, the site of another one of these roundtable discussions that Democratic leadership in Virginia calling in the lead up to the July 9th special session that Governor Ralph Northam wants to focus on gun control efforts. We talked yesterday with a psychiatrist who is at one of the Richmond roundtables, and what a dog and pony show that turned out to be. Well, down in Southwest Virginia, the opponents of gun control were out in full force, and a local TV, Channel 11 there, talked with a couple of the attendees at this roundtable last night.
I've actually had two family members killed here in Abingdon in the last 10, 15 years. None of these laws would have stopped that.
They'll chip away one right at a time until they actually really, really get somebody hurt because they can't protect themselves.
The director of public safety in Virginia, Brian Moran, was on hand last night, and I'll give him this. He acknowledged the obvious. Nobody really walked out of there having had their mind changed. And again, the vast majority of those in attendance were opposed to the special session and opposed to these gun control laws.
Clearly, the majority of the room felt, you know, we were trying to take their right to defend and their Second Amendment rights away.
Clearly. And now Moran went on to say, we're not doing that. Sure. Again, you're calling for magazine bans, you're calling for gun rationing, you're calling for gun bans, you're calling for all kinds of laws, each and every one of them aimed at the people who are legal gun owners in that room last night. Not a single proposal that Governor Ralph Northam has presented is actually aimed at violent criminals. Not a single one. All of these proposals are, again, aimed at restricting or narrowing the exercise of the right to keep and bear arms by law-abiding Virginia citizens. And whether it's Abingdon or Richmond or any of the other localities that are hosting these roundtables, these public officials who are backing this big gun control push, they are getting an earful from involved citizens. Now, I hope that that continues, and I also hope that each and every person that was in attendance last night or at any of these other roundtables remembers that this is an election year in Virginia, and every seat in the legislature is up for grabs. So we've got to be involved now, and we've got to stay involved through Election Day. In Virginia Beach, on the other side of the state, the site of that murder of more than 10 people just a few weeks ago, the city council was debating a resolution that would allow for government buildings to become gun-free zones. You would have thought this would have been a slam dunk in Virginia Beach, but instead the council voted not to hold a vote yet, because there was a lot of pushback, again, from individuals in the audience, including one man who actually works for the city of Virginia Beach.
Council's resolution implies that our citizens do not want government employees to be properly prepared to defend ourselves. Council's resolution, had it been law on May 30th, would not have affected the outcome of this tragedy, not by one single life.
After hearing from voices like that man's, the council decided to hold off on passing a resolution in support of these gun-free zones. We also have news from the Second Amendment Sanctuary Front. There is a community in Virginia that has passed a Second Amendment Sanctuary resolution, but the state that, it didn't get it started. That's Illinois. But Washington State, they hopped on that bandwagon, and there is a community in Washington State that has adopted a Second Amendment Sanctuary status as well. This is in Yakult, Washington, a unanimous vote declaring itself a sanctuary from Initiative 1639. More than 30 people attended the meeting, which is a larger crowd than normal in Yakult, Washington. Everybody who spoke during the meeting came out against I-1639. The mayor talked about having a proclamation rather than a resolution. He said, we can express displeasure with the law. A proclamation puts us on record as saying this law stinks. Council decided to go with a resolution instead of a proclamation. They did not pass any sort of ordinance or anything, but this has a little bit more teeth than a proclamation. And again, we are now 11 days away from Initiative 1639 going into effect, at least some more provisions in I-1639. And while I have heard from FFLs in Washington State that the state is now starting to get more involved in the process of laying out all of the rules and procedures that are going into effect on July the 1st, they are still way behind the curve, and it still looks like this is going to be a very, very messy rollout for some of these initiatives. Now, the other day here on Cam & Company, we were going to talk with our friend Aaron Paulette from Pink Pistols and Operation Blazing Sword. Unfortunately, we're having some connection issues. But one of the things that I wanted to talk with Aaron about was this op-ed in the Washington Post by NRA social media manager Billy McLaughlin. And here's Billy's tweet. The Second Amendment doesn't discriminate, regardless if you are gay or straight. You're a law-abiding American, have the right to defend yourself. The NRA fights for you. I figured, you know, Billy wrote this incredible piece. Why not talk to Billy himself? And he joins us on the program right now. Billy McLaughlin, NRA social media manager. How are you, sir?
Hey, what's up, Cam? How are you?
I am very good. I appreciate you coming on the program, and I appreciate you taking that opportunity to write that for the Washington Post. I mean, this is obviously, I think the NRA gets stereotyped, and you know, anything that we can do to show that the NRA is a cross section of America, I think is good. And so I appreciate you raising your voice. What made you decide that this was something that that you did want to speak out about?
Yeah, sure. So it's actually something that I've always wanted to write since I've, you know, started working at the NRA almost a year and a half ago. Because, well, you know, when I started at the NRA, there was just this onslaught of people coming. They're like, the NRA is racist. I can't believe you would work for them. They're homophobic. It's this big gun lobby, and they're scary and stuff like this. And you know, it was from friends. It was from people when I'd go out to bars. It was from people in D.C. And so it kind of, in the beginning when I first took the job, I was kind of, in the beginning I was really excited. And then it kind of turned into a little bit of nervousness. And I tried, and I almost started to believe them. And I was like, all right, how am I going to deal with this? So I convinced myself that someone's sexuality didn't belong at work. So I was like, I'm just not going to come out. I'm just going to leave that part of my life at home. I'm going to go work for the NRA, defend the Second Amendment. And then about 2 weeks after I started, I was at annual meeting. I was backstage as President Trump and Vice President Pence are speaking. And then our executive director, Chris Cox, also got up. And he said, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, black, white, rich, poor, gay or straight. You have the right to defend yourself. And the NRA is proud to fight for you. So at that point, it was kind of like I was backstage and I heard it because there were TVs there, and I was just shocked. And I remember getting back to headquarters, and I was actually sitting in one of my colleagues' offices. I was going through all the video, cutting some video for Instagram and Facebook, and came across that clip again. And it was kind of this weird moment again where I remembered what everyone told me when I started, and I looked at my colleague. I was like, hey, is this something that's okay to post? And her name's Amber. She looked at me. She's like, yes, why wouldn't we post that? She was so shocked. And at that moment, it's kind of when it all came together, where I'm like, oh my God, the NRA isn't this, you know, awful organization. We aren't homophobic. We are the world's greatest civil rights organization. We fight for everyone. You know, it doesn't matter what religion you are. It doesn't matter what race you are. It doesn't matter your sexual orientation. If you're in a wheelchair, if you're a law-abiding American, then we fight for you. And I'm really proud to work for the NRA. So that's kind of why I wrote that op-ed, to get that message out and kind of break that stereotype that, you know, that the NRA has, and also pose a question to the LGBTQ community about why they do oppose the NRA and the Second Amendment.
Well, listen, again, I it's funny to hear you talk about that, because it's been more than 15 years since I started here at Cam & Company. But I remember very early on, before I had even accepted the job, asking, and again, it's for the same reason that you did. You know, I had a lot of friends who were like, I don't think they're gonna like your family. And so I asked, I was like, well, look, I've got two biracial kids. Is that going to be a problem? And they looked at me like I had a third eye growing out of my forehead. Like, what are you talking
exactly
about? And so, you know, we debuted Cam & Company at the NRA Annual Meeting in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And as soon as I'm on the ground in Pittsburgh, and as soon as I start talking to NRA members, I'm like, well, This was stupid. I don't know even why I thought about that. And you're right. In a day and age in which we are becoming, I think, increasingly tribal, and we are slicing and dicing ourselves into the narrowest demographics possible, it's interesting. The NRA is maybe the biggest tent organization that I know of, right? Where the only thing that really matters is, do you support our right to keep and bear arms? And if you support our right to keep and bear arms, guess what? Welcome to the family, right?
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's what everyone has in common, that we, you know, and something we could all agree on is that we support the right to keep and bear arms, and no one is going to take that away from us. So it's a fight that we're fighting together. So it's been awesome, you know, also to see the reactions about the op-ed from both sides. It's you know, I truly believe that we are the most inclusive community.
Listen, I'm right there with you. But, you know, I want to ask about the other side, because you said that one of the reasons why you wrote this was you wanted to let the LGBT community know that, hey, you know what, the NRA isn't the boogeyman that you think that it is. You know, I've heard from folks like Chris Cheng that when he came out as a gun owner, that was much more controversial in San Francisco and in the tech world than him coming out as a gay man. And I think that is probably the case, right? I mean, so what has the reaction been? And really, what do you want the LGBT community to get out of this? Is it as simple as this is your right too, and there's a place for you within the NRA?
Well, you know, Cam, you absolutely are right. And that's what, like, a lot of my gay conservative friends say also is it's people who work so hard to accept their sexuality and to come out of the closet. And then they finally do, and their family accepts them, their friends accept them. And then it's harder for them to come out as conservative, which is just, you know, weird. Like, there's a huge, it's, you know, there's, let's look at all the people who voted for Trump. It's not weird to be conservative, and yet it's hard to come out as conservative. But along with the responses from the other side, the responses have been interesting. You know, there's been a few which have kind of been weird. People calling me homophobic, which I was shocked by. How do you call a gay person homophobic? Right? There was also someone who called me fat and ugly and all those things. So you have the tolerant left. And then there was also people on the left who did reach out and who wanted to learn more. But the thing that I found interesting about all their responses or you know, most of their responses is that they always would say, well, Billy, I'm pro Second Amendment, I'm LGBT, I'm a Democrat, but I also support this gun control law, right? Banning semi-autos, banning magazines, I support longer wait periods. So the way I respond is, well, how can you be pro Second Amendment if you support, you know, making it longer for someone for a single mother who's being stalked by an ex-boyfriend to get a gun? How are you pro Second Amendment if you want to ban the, you know, America's most popular rifle? So it just doesn't make sense, that response. And I think that's what we're seeing also from a majority of the Democratic candidates, is that they all say, I'm pro Second Amendment, but I support every gun control under the sun. So my purpose from this op-ed, it was to pose a question to them. And what I hope is that at least one person who does read that article, you know, takes a look at it and says, well, this dude's right. Hate crimes have increased in D.C. Hate crimes have increased nationwide. You know, just on Memorial Day weekend, 3 LGBT people were killed in Chicago, or in Detroit, I'm sorry. Just last weekend, there was a hate crime against 2 LGBT people in D.C., where I live. So I hope that one person reads this who's on the other side and thinks, well, how am I going to defend my life when evil appears? And hopefully this shows them that the best way to do that is to support the Second Amendment, is to arm yourself and to never, ever be a victim. So
That's why I use that hashtag, self-defense is a human right, all the time.
Exactly.
And Billy, again, man, thank you so much for pinning this piece. Thank you for coming on the program. Thanks for everything you do. And I still can't believe, by the way, you got hired when you were 24. That was the most shocking thing about this story to me. But that's a conversation for another day. I appreciate it, man.
Exactly. All right. Thanks. Thanks, Kat.
All right, Billy McLaughlin joined us, NRA social media manager here on Cam and Company. Joe Biden, I can't tell you what's up with Joe Biden, but he was at a fundraiser with a lot of very wealthy individuals and talking about how he's not going to raise your taxes, your lifestyle is going to be fine. He's talking about hanging out with pro-segregationist senators. But he also talked about James Bond-style smart guns. Yep, he said, if I get elected president of the United States of America with your help, if that happens, guns, we have the capacity now in a James Bond style to make sure that no one can pull a trigger unless their DNA and fingerprint is on it. We have that capacity to do it now. You know it. No, we really don't, because if we did, one of those firearms would probably have come to market. But this, again, shows you, again, where Joe Biden's mindset is, and frankly, where the mindset is of every other Democrat involved in the disarmament primary right now. They're thinking about you and me and legal gun owners and what laws they can pass to impact you and me and legal gun owners. Now, look, I don't think that smart guns should be banned, but me personally, I have concerns about smart guns. You know, Joe Biden talks about, well, you got your fingerprint, your DNA. First of all, I don't know of any smart gun design that is based on your DNA. There are some smart gun designs that have been attempted where it's your fingerprint. Do you have this experience with your phone ever where your hands are wet or it's raining and you try to use your little thumb reader and it doesn't work and you end up having to enter in your code? Imagine doing that when someone's breaking into your house. Imagine doing that when somebody is trying to carjack you. The idea that we're going to put an additional thing that can go wrong on a firearm, another point of failure so that I couldn't use this firearm to defend myself, that to me is the biggest drawback to smart gun technology. And I think that's going to be the biggest drawback when these firearms actually come to market. And it's something, by the way, that Joe Biden doesn't address. And in fact, he seems to be okay with mandating something like this. Front runner right now in the Democratic disarmament primary. Now, down in the great state of Texas, the legislature has concluded meeting 140 days every other year. It's amazing. And it's always a frenzy whenever they meet. 10 new pro-Second Amendment bills signed into law this legislative session by Governor Greg Abbott. And join me to talk about some of these measures. Very pleased to have with us Denton County Sheriff Tracy Murphy. Sheriff Murphy, thank you, sir, for coming on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. Well, again, you know, there are a lot of these bills to talk about, but I think a couple in particular certainly stand out in terms of, you know, improving public safety. One of these laws clarifies an attorney general's opinion that houses of worship, these are not gun-free zones unless the pastor or the house of worship explicitly states that, yes, this is a gun-free zone, correct?
Yeah, so under the previous penal code, it was actually a prohibited place where you can't have a firearm. And I applaud the governor. I'm glad I live in Texas. I'm glad we have Governor Abbott. And what this does is it gives, you know, like you said, it gives the congregation, it gives the pastor and his parishioners the ability to decide if they want to allow that in their house of worship. And, you know, the houses of worship have become a soft target. And you know as well as I do, Cam, these people who come in and do these mass shootings, 100% of the time when they're met with somebody else shooting back at them, they turn and run. And they knew in Texas that more than likely the people attending that church are law-abiding people and aren't going to have a firearm in those churches. And now they're going to have to think twice about that. They're going to have to really understand that that's no longer the law, that these people are going to be allowed to defend themselves. And I'm very happy about that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you talk about, again, 100% of the time that that individual turns and runs when they're confronted by an armed response. I think you're right about that. I would also say that 0% of the time does an individual have murder on their mind and evil in their heart, and they walk up to a building and say, oh, shoot, this is a prohibited place. I can't bring my gun inside, and they turn around and go home. That doesn't happen.
No, it's exact opposite. What they do is they exploit these laws. They know that these folks in here, the law-abiding citizen is going to obey the law. The criminal is never going to obey the law. And actually what these laws do is it gives targets for these criminals to target, because they don't want to be engaged. They don't want bullets coming back at them. They don't want armed citizens protecting themselves. So, you know, what the left does not understand is that these gun laws do not affect the criminals. It affects the law-abiding citizen who's going to do the right thing, who's going to obey the law, and it puts them in danger every time one of these gun laws are enacted.
Absolutely. And, you know, one other measure, this is not strictly a Second Amendment issue, but it does involve firearms. In Texas, you all have had that Guardian program, which states that for, I believe it's every 200 students, you can have somebody that's trained up, volunteered, they're vetted. This removes that cap. Now there's a law that's been signed by Governor Abbott that says, okay, it's not one per 200. It's however many the school district feels is necessary to protect every one of those students in school.
Right. You know, and I'm a huge advocate of local control of your schools. And no school is built the same way. No school is going to have the same security concerns as the next school. You're going to have rural schools. You're going to have city schools. They're just got different concerns. And, you know, to put a cap on how much protection you can give your kids was absolutely ridiculous. And what this does is this lets the school district, it lets the parents, it lets the school board make that decision on what sort of security they need, what sort of security they want, and they don't have to, a lot of the schools in Texas are lucky to have 200 students in them at all. And so I'm very much in support of that these school districts need to make those decisions, and Austin needs to stick to what Austin needs to take care of.
Talking again with Denton County Sheriff Tracy Murphy. We're not going to have time to get to all 10 of these bills, but let me ask you about one other one that basically says if you are a renter, that you can't have a no firearms clause. Your landlord can't, slap one on the lease and say, all right, well, you can move into your apartment or whatever, but you can't have a gun there. That to me, I think, is absolutely huge. I understand the private property rights, but the right of self-defense should not trump, in my opinion, the property rights of a landlord who says, I want my building that I don't live in, but 20 other people do, to be a gun-free zone.
Right. You know, Cam, the right to keep and bear arms is a constitutional right. This is akin to an apartment complex putting in their lease agreement. Hey, if you're a Christian, you can't live here. If you're a Muslim, you can't live here. It's the Second Amendment is just as important as the First Amendment. And, you know, the left is going after the Second Amendment because they think that that's one that they can get. And it's what they're looking for is a domino effect. If they can get one, Cam, they can get them all, and that's what they're after. They're after government control. They're after a socialist government, and that's why people who don't even care about guns, people who may not care either way, need to get on board with protecting your Second Amendment, because if it goes, your first and your fourth and your fifth may be going right after that.
Absolutely. Sheriff Murphy, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the program. Thanks for everything you do there in Denton County, and hope we get to have you back on again soon.
Anytime, Cam. Thank you.
Appreciate it very much, sir. All right. I probably spent several days in Denton County driving from Oklahoma City back and forth to Dallas. Great, great community. Up in our neighbor to the north, up in Canada, they are once again talking about a handgun ban, or perhaps a ban on all semi-automatic long guns. But the crime reduction minister, Bill Blair, who's been investigating this issue, is now kind of hinting that despite the fact that this is an urgent matter and it needs to be addressed right away, they're not going to address anything until after the elections are held in Canada. The federal elections are held later this year.
But there are some weapons, quite frankly, in my opinion, that are so dangerous. But there really is no place in a safe and civil society for them. And I think there are measures that we can take to make those guns just generally unacceptable and inaccessible.
So those were comments made before a cabinet meeting yesterday. It was last August that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau tasked Bill Blair with going on a listening tour, talking to various stakeholders, pro-gun control groups, pro-gun groups, not pro-Second Amendment groups because they don't have Second Amendment in Canada, and then to report back about the feasibility of a ban on all handguns and a ban on all semi-automatic long guns in Canada. That report was presented in early 2019, mid to late January, I believe. And since then, the Trudeau government has been sitting on this and doing nothing. Yeah, I know. While talking again about the urgency and the need to do something, they've done nothing. So why haven't they made a move? Well, I mean, we've talked with Tony Bernardo from the Canadian Institute for Legislative Action on the program before, and I think it's a purely political decision. I think Justin Trudeau knows that this would hurt him and his party in the polls. that it would bolster the chances of conservatives in parliament. And so he does not want this to be an election issue. He's, by his own metric, Justin Trudeau appears to be willing to put politics above public safety, because if he really thought this was going to improve public safety, he'd be pushing for it. Instead, it's playing politics with the ability to own a firearm in Canada. All right, on to our hero of the day and our deal of the day. Hero of the day from Trenton, Missouri, Fox 4 in Kansas City, reporting on a scary incident that happened Friday. Jasmine Diab, who's a police officer in Trenton, Missouri, was shot by a prisoner that she was transporting. She was about a half hour into transporting this guy, Jamie Aaron Griffin, from the jail in Trenton to a hospital in St. Joseph, when Griffin somehow got a hold of Officer Diab's gun and shot her in the stomach. Griffin was shot in the hand. The Missouri Highway Patrol Trooper Jake Engel says there were some citizens, after the vehicle came to a rolling stop, there were some citizens at a convenience store in Winston, Missouri, that, he says, I suppose since something wasn't right, they came over to her and subdued the suspect until law enforcement arrived. One of those Good Samaritans, according to Fox 4 in Kansas City, was legally armed with a firearm. Trooper Angle says, in this case, they chose to intervene and come to an officer's aid and subdue the suspect and possibly keeping him from escaping or doing more harm. Trooper Angle said, I'm not advocating that people need to feel that they intervene in a situation to this level. However, people chose to. And in this situation, it was critical. I understand the trooper's words here, but I think we can read between the lines. And I think what he's saying is he's really glad that people intervened. No, you don't have a duty to intervene. Not under the law. But you might have a moral duty to intervene. You know, we talk about our good guys being in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Well, that certainly applies to this situation there in Winston, Missouri as well. So to those individuals coming to the aid of Officer Diab, and to that armed individual helping to keep that suspect there until officers arrived, here today's good guy for you. Our good guy, or today's hero for you, our good guy of the day, brought to you by our friends at Odor Crusher. From Channel 12 News in Binghamton, New York, Brad Kaczynski is a school resource officer, and every Friday he has a standing appointment with this guy right there, Danny Rogers, at the Columbus Learning Center. Officer Kaczynski said he noticed that Danny was sitting by himself, pretty upset one day. He said, I went over to talk to him to see if maybe I could help the situation. We got to talking a little bit, and I said, we'll do something fun for lunch. So he bought Danny lunch, including mozzarella sticks, sat there, talked with him. And now this is, again, it's a standard appointment each and every Friday. He says it's something that helps him get through the week. He says we can do it as an incentive, as our special thing on Friday. Teachers there at the elementary school say that Officer Kaczynski can be seen spending time with other kids. He is a very open individual. He says he plans on returning to the school next year. If Danny is there, Danny hopes that he will be. And the friendship will continue. That's going to do it for this edition of Cam and Company right here on NRA TV. Thank you so much for being a part of the program. We'll do it again tomorrow, 5:30 Eastern, right here, with all of the day's top Second Amendment news and information headed your way.